Do you run your own freelance business? Or maybe you're thinking about picking up some business on the side? Well, then you need FreshBooks. FreshBooks is the quickest and easiest way to get invoices out to your clients. It's easy to use. It works anywhere, available from any device on the desktop, iPhone, iPad, Android, and all of your data is backed up and secure. And it makes it really easy to get organized and get paid. You'll be tracking time, logging expenses, and invoicing your clients in no time. You can also save time billing, freeing up several days per month to focus on the work that you love, and you get paid faster. FreshBooks customers are paid on average 5 days faster because there's a link on the invoice that says pay me now. And it's a great way to grow your business. Plus, FreshBooks is offering a 30-day trial. That's right, 30-day trial if you try them out. So go to gofreshbooks.com/devchat and enter devchat in the how did you hear about us section. Once again, for a 30-day trial, go to gofreshbooks.com/devchat and enter devchat in the how did you hear about us section. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Adventures in Angular. This week on our panel, we have Alyssa Nichol.
Hey.
Joe Eames.
Hey, everybody.
Ward Bell.
Oh, hello.
I'm Charles Max Wood from devchat.tv. And this week, we have a special guest, and that is Jesse Sanders. Jesse, you want to introduce yourself real quick? Let people know who you are, what you do, why you're famous?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Chuck. I appreciate it. My name is Jesse Sanders. I'm the CEO of Brebug. We're a local consulting firm here in Denver, Colorado. And most of my focus is around architecting applications and then helping clients come up with creative solutions for their technical problems. So, yeah.
Brebug, that name reminds me of cheese. I like you a lot now.
Hey, can you expand on what you mean by helping clients come up with, what was it you said?
Creative?
Creative solutions, yes,
creative absolutely. Solutions, yeah. Can you like expand upon that?
Sure, absolutely. We're a local consultancy here in Denver, and we work with a lot of different clients. A lot of the stuff that we work with is clients that have gotten either in over their head with old technologies, or they're currently in an Angular project right now, and they're struggling. They're having difficulties figuring out how do we address these technical challenges.
What if I get it over on my head on a current technology?
Well, one of those current technologies that we work with absolutely is Angular, and that's primarily where we steer people towards is Angular, and looking at patterns like Redux or MobX or something like that to help them control and the state and the changes and the component to component communication. So yeah, that's largely what we do. We work with a variety of clients with a variety of very interesting problems. So lots of new stuff to always look at and figure out like how are we going to approach this.
So you know why Angular's so hard then, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Is that like a punchline to it? Is that a setup for a joke?
That sounds like a setup for a joke.
Maybe. Why is it so hard?
How many developers does it take to screw in an Angular light bulb?
Right. So, Jesse, you're the CEO, is that right?
Correct. Absolutely. And I've been a developer myself for 20 years as well. So, yeah, lots of different experience, as a developer and working on projects.
Awesome. So we brought you along to talk about NGRX and entities and Redux state. And I'm using a bunch of terms that I think some people are going to be familiar with, but a lot of other people are going to be kind of unfamiliar with. They start out with the basic, generic, normal, I don't know what other word to use, Angular setup. And they stick components in their page, and it all goes nicely. So what is this state management stuff that we're all worried about here then?
Sure, that's a great question. As applications are small, it's pretty easy. We can start to create components, and those components are going to emit and subscribe to, events being fired. But as we start to get into larger applications, and we get into enterprise-class applications, that communication becomes more complex, and especially over a period of time. If we're talking about a really small team of one or two developers, it's pretty easy to manage, like, who's calling what and what components are, emitting events and subscribing to events. But as we get into larger teams and larger applications, it gets a lot more complicated. And before we know it, a lot of times we'll get into this spaghetti code mess.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where libraries like Redux are actually, the library is NGRX, but the concept is Redux. And the idea here is to start to simplify our communication. So if we think about, you know, what I think about is the original, you know, AngularJS, when we first started out, you know, we wrote these really big controllers and really big views and things were great. You know, we were really big on two-way data binding. And then we started moving towards a component-based design, and that really helps simplify things. We no longer have controllers that are a couple thousand lines of JavaScript code and, you know, a couple thousand lines of HTML.
Hey, speak for yourself.
Yeah, real. To be honest, actually, you should, you know, you can, with the best pattern, I still see people doing that anyway. They just love their thousand lines of code. But yeah, go ahead.
It does. Yeah, it doesn't start that way, though, right? I mean, you just keep adding stuff until it works. And
it would be so awesome if you could start with a thousand lines of code, right? Like, open up a file, boom, there's a thousand lines of code there.
Actually, that's very easy to do. There are code generators that do this for us.
Oh, that's true.
But I digress. Please, Jesse.
Yeah. So, you know, basically, as we massive controllers, massive views, and we start to break them down into components, you know, this. Now managing all the complexity of these components firing, and you know, we make a change over here and it affects three other components. And what starts to happen then is over a period of time is we start to get confused over what components are doing what. It's very difficult to map all the eventing and whatnot that's going on. And so Redux is a pattern to help us start to manage that and have a central store, a central way of handling all those events. So instead of having each component know about, you know, everything that's going on within its own world, we start to break things down to smart components and dumb components. And smart components understanding really be more top-level, page-level components, if you will. And then dumb components going, well, I don't really know what happens, but you just click the save button, and I'm supposed to dispatch an event, and somewhere else it gets handled. So it really helps us simplify our code. Our components go from, you know, a couple hundred lines of code to often down to maybe 50 lines of code. So the Redux pattern itself, what I love about it, it's unopinionated. I have lots of different ways that I can implement it. It's also a pattern where it's not a all or nothing. You know, a lot of times we have to, if we're going to adopt a technology or an enterprise pattern, we're going to have to, you know, pretty much adopt it for everything and completely restructure our application. The great thing about Redux is that we can actually just focus on the areas that are the biggest problems and then decide on a case-by-case basis in the other areas whether or not we want to use the Redux pattern and put that data into a store, because sometimes it doesn't necessarily make sense to do so.
So let me see if I understand this correctly. You can go in on a project that has been just developed in your typical, I'm just going to write code way, and you could just add Redux sort of incrementally into places that there are problems, and that's one of the tactics you use?
Absolutely. A lot of times we do have these great applications, but we'll have one area that is a particular problem. It might be overly complicated. A really good example might be a wizard where we're stepping through back and forth between steps, and we have a lot of state management that's going on. And so the great thing here is we don't have to address the entire application. I can just go in and pinpoint that one little spot that's causing a problem, and we can get that fixed and address those issues with Redux, and then leave the rest of the app until such time that we decide, yeah, you know, we want to go ahead and convert the rest of it, or we may decide that, no, you know what, it's actually quite well just as is.
One other thing I just want to clarify quickly. You keep using the word Redux, and I know some people are going to say, isn't that a React thingy and not an Angular thingy? And thingy is a technical term that I use. Can you just explain, you know, basically, you know, NGRX is based around Redux, and can you just deepen our knowledge there a little bit?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So Redux, Redux itself is just a pattern. It's actually unopinionated. It's not tied to a particular framework. Though most of us, when we hear Redux, we think about React, because that's where it really got a lot of traction, where it started out at. The NGRX library adopted the Redux pattern, and that's what brought Redux to Angular. There's actually, I think, a couple of different implementations, but I believe the NGRX library is the most popular. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about Redux, I tend to say just Redux, because we may have people using different libraries besides NGRX, and so I want to be conscious of that. The most popular one and the one that we use most often is NGRX. In fact, actually, we don't use any of the other libraries. And so I hope that clears it up. Does that answer your question?
Yeah,
sort of. But Jesse, you talk about it being unopinionated. I'm completely confused by that.
Ward has an opinion that it's not unopinionated.
Oh, no. It has pretty strong opinions, don't you think?
There are some, but there's no, like, you don't have to implement it any particular way. So it's not actually forcing you to go down outside of some actions reducers. Outside of those two concepts, you don't actually have to go out and implement, effects if you don't want to. Highly recommend.
You do. You got to do. So, yes, you do. You have to do something like a, because you have to do. You have to call do something asynchronous, and reducers are, if nothing else, synchronous. So you have to do. If you're not going to use effects, you're going to have to do something.
You're going to have to do something, but you don't necessarily exactly have to go down that path. There are some other ways you can implement it without an effect. Effects is the easiest way to do it. It's the cleanest way to do it, in my opinion. And yet you're right. There are some things that are opinionated. You know, you're going to need to set up actions. You're going to need to set up reducers, and you're going to have to deal with your asynchronous actions.
And you're going to have to have immutable data too, right? The whole thing falls apart if you mutate, right?
Absolutely. And that's a little bit what we're going to talk about with the NGRX entity library and talk about how we want to store data. Versus just tossing stuff in and hoping that we're going to be able to work with it later, because it's actually super simple to mutate your data, especially when we're talking about nested data.
Okay. So I want to back up just a little bit and ask you a couple of questions. I mean, I know we want to talk about entity. When I saw your talk over at AngularMix, is that talk online? It's not, right?
Actually, it is. It's posted on our Breva.
That's right. You guys recorded it. That's right. Angular Mix didn't, but you guys did.
We ended up recording that ourselves at Angular Mix, and we posted that out there. The slides are also available, and I believe we also have a link for the GitHub project that we use, showing how we take an existing Redux product or project and then be able to convert that over using the new entity library.
Okay, so I saw that talk. That was very interesting. But I wanted to ask you about just NGRX in general, right? So I think that there's a fairly common perception amongst people that Redux and NGRX specifically, but Redux in general, is really used by a lot of people because it's used by a lot of people, right?
So, like, it's only used because it's popular?
Yeah. Yeah. So what would you say about that?
Sure. You know, I'm not sure what other people's motives are for using it. I think that sometimes people use it in a situation where it doesn't make sense. So there's a lot of use cases you can come back and say, you know what, Redux is not the right choice. If it's a really small app, unless you're doing this for an academic purpose or you believe that the app is going to grow into something much bigger and you're just building a small piece of it, then it probably doesn't make sense to take on the overhead of creating actions and reducers. That's going to force you to do some more planning and laying stuff out before you really get started, and it might slow down your velocity on a really small project. And that's probably the most common scenario, is that you might want to look at something like MobX or just do it in a standard tour of heroes sort of way, and build your application like that, and decide later that Redux is what you want to use because it now makes sense. Things are starting to get complicated. We're starting to get into race conditions, or starting to have a lot of eventing, and we're starting to get into a spaghetti code sort of situation.
Okay. So I want to come back to that, but I want to ask you one other question kind of along the same vein, and that is, there's a fairly common complaint that Redux has so much ceremony around it, so much extra code you have to write anytime you want to do any one thing, that a lot of people are fairly disenchanted when they first try it out.
Jeez, Joe, I don't have to say a thing, do I?
Oh, Ward, we would never assume that would ever happen.
the dissenters of Redux.
It's not just, by the way, it's not. In other words, I used to feel like I was crying alone in the wilderness about this. But you don't have, look around. I mean, people are talking about this like you got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me. I got to write all these actions and reducers and asynchronous things and the music. You know, you put the you drop the penny here and it goes all the way around and it comes back. Now I'm going to say that my recent experience, I think I know how to tame this. But for anybody who's reading about Redux or NGRX today, there is hardly, I mean, you're going to talk about effects, which is an attempt to bring this back under control. But this is the reality that everybody who is confronting these patterns is encountering, and the inventor of Redux concedes as much himself.
That's a fair point. You know, I kind of push back the other way as well and say, well, you know what? When we start to define all the actions, those are still things that we were handling before. We have we need to go load something, and when it succeeds, we need to do something, and if it fails, we need to do something. And it's really just laying it out in a little different way. I think if we talk about a small application, it doesn't make sense because we're only going to do probably each one of those actions once, and so maybe it doesn't make as much sense. But when we're talking about larger enterprise class applications, you know, big applications, we're going to be doing those a lot and probably in different areas. And we start to get to that level. Now we start to get the payoff. We start to get the benefits of having it in a single spot with a single source of truth versus if all we're doing is a simple CRUD application and it's only being done in one spot, then you you don't really have a need for Redux. And so just because it's popular doesn't mean that it's the right choice.
So I don't know about you, for you, but for me, the pattern starts to look more interesting when there's a lot of shared state across the components.
Yep. And that's
if you've just got a component that goes out and gets its own data and is happily living all by its little lonesome, this Redux stuff is way over the top. But if you actually think that, this component's going to be interested in companies, and that one is going to be interested in companies, and the other one over there is going to be interested in it, and when somebody over here makes a change to the companies, I need to know about it over there in a decoupled way, then you have to say, well, how am I going to coordinate the view of company or customer, whatever the concept is, across all of those components? And you can do that with a simple service. You can start to do it that way, but Redux says, now I've got this profusion of services. Maybe I can have a single pattern for how I handle this. And here it is. It's called the Redux pattern. Do you buy into that being it's about shared state. It's not about local state. Is that fair summary of when you use one and versus the other?
Again, it's state and no one else is using, that state. There's really no need for Redux. Right. Maybe the other exception would be like, okay, we've got a lot of complex communication going on and all these different components are attempting to load the same data. And so what we start to notice is that we've got, let's say we've got a drop down up on the menu bar, and then that's going to force reloads of the entire page. And some of those components then are going to attempt to reload the same data. And we're noticing in our console on our network tab that, oh my God, I'm reloading products four times.
That's shared state.
Exactly. Now we're in a shared state. Now it starts to make sense of like, hey, Redux would really help us simplify this. We could write a bunch of code that would help us do this on our own. But then we're just basically writing, in my mind, a Redux-esque sort of pattern when we've got a really nice library that would handle that for us.
As with frameworks, right?
I think there's an intermediate step, honestly. I mean, I think, they could all share a single service. Each they could share a service that was doing the caching for them, the product service. So it took care of, everybody's getting the same view of product. Where things start to get more tricky is when you've got lots of those. You've got products and orders and order line items and customers, and now you've got to coordinate among all those, and they all intersect each other. And you've got 16 different ways of doing that. Then I think that's what I feel that people are looking you know, when they hit that, that they start saying, well, maybe I need a consistent methodology for managing shared state and share and a single way to deal with communications across the components. And that's like what it is, right? I mean, it seems to me that's what the Redux, or at least the NGRX pattern is.
Yeah,
I'm sorry to divert you, because we partly want to understand this, but we, you know, I think you want to go beyond that and to talk about what tool sets you're using now.
Absolutely, but I think these are some great points, and I think we could probably summarize it with this: if we're bringing in Redux and all we're doing is increasing the complexity of the application, and we're not reducing the complexity, then maybe it's a good opportunity to take a look at it and say, hey, why are we actually doing this? Does this make sense for this app? And so I'm definitely a proponent of looking at the right technology for the right solution. There is no, you know, one size fits all solution for everything. If there was, we'd probably all be out of jobs and, you know, be doing something else. But yeah, I think these are all great points.
So tell us let's assume that we've decided that NGRX is right for us. First of all, let's sort of summarize it. Would you say that NGRX is kind of like the Redux pattern meets RxJS observables and plugs nicely and plays nicely within Angular? I mean, to me, that you know, what is NGRX? It's Redux plus RxJS fitted into Angular. Is that like a one sentence elevator pitch?
I think that's a great pitch for it. You should be their spokesperson, I think.
So if we decided we want to do that, you know, whether we made a good deal or a good choice or a bad choice, you've got some ideas about how to make that livable. What are they?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the first thing that we want to start to do is look at what data we're storing and how we're storing it, because that starts to become a big problem as well. So just like any other technology solution, you know, we start to get in and we're developing it and we're putting our data in there. And what we start to see is that we'd start to get more and more nested data going into our store. And we would nest data, either it's coming that way down from the API, or I'm making choices on my side to say, hey, you know what, this belongs with this. I'll go ahead and just nest this underneath, you know. So a really good example would be a blog, right? Where I've got a post and I've got comments, and I'm just going to go ahead and attach the comments to the post because that makes it nice and simple. And that's actually causes a new problem. Now, you know, one of the other really big proponents of using Redux is how simple it makes testing. It's really easy to test reducers, really easy to test the UI. We can use them in the libraries like JustJS to do state comparisons and whatnot. But when we start nesting data, we start to see a new problem, and that is it becomes complex in our reducers. We no longer have a single line reducer that says, hey, I'm going to take this state and I'm going to spread it and I'm going to combine it with this state over here, and ta-da, we're done, right? It's, you know, 1, 2, 3 lines of code. We start looking at nested data, depending on how deeply it's nested, we could have it, you know, where now our reducer is 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 lines of code, because we're having to dig in, find the exact record that we're looking for, and now, you know, apply the update or apply whatever that change is, right? And so one of the first things that I like to talk about is, you know, what data should be kept in state? What should we be looking at? And part of that, you know, we've got application data, we've got UI data, and we've got domain data. UI data is not too bad. You know, it's usually, you know, what's my UI state? If I refresh the browser, you know, is the menu bar going to display the same? Is the sidebar going to be expanded or collapsed, or whatever, you know, sorts of things we might have with the UI. We might have some application state, which might be stuff like, you know, am I currently loading products? What's my who's my currently logged in user? Or, you know, who am I impersonating? Stuff like that. Stuff that data that we'd need in case we'd need to re-render the page again and get it back to the perfect state of, you know, where it last was. And the last is the domain data. And that's usually where we see the most abuse at, where we start to nest this data. We start to see our reducers become really, really complex and unnecessarily so. So That's like the first part. I think that most of us need to take a look at is what data are we storing? Are we nesting it? And how are we treating that data? So really the idea here that I like to impress upon people is let's start treating our client-side store just like it was a database. No more
relational database, not a NoSQL database, because the first natural thing, take your blog post thing, is as you were saying, it's posts and comments.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was, customers with order, you can imagine the tree, customers, orders, and order details, linking out the products, that's quite a nested graph, right? And so what you're saying is one of the first rules is normalize it, right?
Absolutely. Normalize your data, treat it like a database, stop nesting data under each other, and now start to create references to that other data. Because the other big challenge that happens here, and this is where people get locked up with Redux, is they go to make a change of the data, and they have this complex reducer, but that data is actually nested in multiple locations. And so now, let's say if we update the user's name, now we've got to go find all the different places where that user's name has been embedded into another piece of data, in another store item, and I've got to go update all of those. That's a new nightmare, right? And so instead, we start to make references for the data and say, okay, the author for this blog is a user, and we're going to point to that user ID. And then same on the comment, that we'll go ahead and point to the user then for each one of the comments, who made that comment. And so now we no longer have nested data, and we no longer have duplicated data. So that's even probably the bigger point.
Right. We have relational and we have foreign keys. Mm-hmm. So the comment, the comment has a foreign key that points back to the post to which it's attached, right?
Absolutely. Exactly. So then from there, once we actually get our data normalized, and we've got those things worked out, then the challenge is, how do we select our data quickly and easily? How do we find things by key? If we have to go back through and do a find on every item, that tends to be pretty slow. And so the redux.js.org website, which is it's just more from the spec for Redux. They recommend converting your data from array data to dictionary data. And in that way, what is stored is, instead of having array data, we've got now an object, a dictionary, that is the primary key of the data element, and then the object that's associated to. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Great. But the problem with that then is, so now we can create really powerful selectors. We can very quickly select the data. But then the problem is that when I go to render that that data onto the page, rendering dictionary data doesn't work so hot. The the NG4 directive doesn't know how to work with dictionaries. That's not a native piece there. And so when we actually go to render it, then the problem is that now we need to get it back to array data. So that
which
we
can do with the object, which you can do with object.values, right? So you get an array of values, but you have a problem.
We can do it that way, or we can start to bring in the entity library. So the entity library it actually helps us solve this problem. Because even the bigger problem, I think, is, we might be able to use the values piece to be able to, rebuild it that way. Great, that'll work. But we'd have to home roll that, and that'd be a lot of boilerplate, right?
Well, it has another problem too, which I discovered the other day.
Yeah, what's that? What's that problem?
The problem is that it doesn't preserve order. Like if your keys were goods or something like that, which they often are coming from a database, then every time you add a new one, the order of the things is going to shuffle around. So,
You're going to love the entity library, because that actually solves this problem for you.
It solves that problem, exactly.
Yep. So the interface for that is the entity state, and the interface there defines two properties. One is entities, which is the dictionary for all your objects, and then the other one is IDs, which is the order that they naturally go in. So that could be the order that they're coming back from the server, or you also have the option of having those sorted based off whatever field you want, and then when you insert or update, it'll go ahead and shuffle those for you automatically. So yeah, the big challenge there is, okay, so I get this great data down from my API. Now, how do I take it from an array data and now convert it quickly into dictionary data and not have to do a whole bunch of work? So, you know, the entity state interface combined with the adapter. The adapter is actually the one that does all the heavy lifting. And using the adapter object, I can go ahead and just, it actually has a, I think it's a 6 or 7 static methods. And really they just come down to add, update, and remove. Update one, update many, and then remove one, remove many, remove all. I believe something like that. And so those static methods are used to automatically add items into the dictionary, and we don't have to write any additional code for that. So makes it nice and easy. It also updates then the list of IDs. You know, if they're unsorted, then it'll go ahead and place those at the end. Otherwise, if we have a sort function that we want to have applied there, we can add that to our adapter during the creation of that. And it'll go ahead and automatically do that for us. Obviously, if we do that, there's a price we pay, a little bit of a performance hit, but nothing too unreasonable.
So essentially, you know, we've talked about if you take your naive approach to managing the estate, the entities library, and then we realize, wow, there's more to it than I thought. Then the entities library cuts that all down and provides pre-canned methods and reducers, and a reducer that understands those methods, right?
It doesn't actually supply a pre-canned reducer. It supplies an adapter, and the adapter is what we use in our reducer. So
that's correct. I misspoke. You're right. Yeah.
So what happens there is, you know, if we take a typical reducer function, typically we're going to identify it right away because it's got square brackets around it. We're going to go ahead and spread our existing state and then comma, you know, we're going to spread whatever our action payload is, right? And then that's surrounded by the array, so it gets reapplied back to an array, and bada boom, we've changed our state. And so the difference here is that instead of doing that, we're actually going to now no longer be square brackets for an array. We're going to be surrounded by an object literal. What we're going to do there is we're actually going to say adapter dot add many. So let's say if we go out and load a list of customers, we'll do add many with the existing state and then with the action payload. So it, again, it's one line of code. So we don't have to do a whole bunch of craziness of how we're going to convert it to a dictionary and manage, you know, the sort order and all those sorts of things. We're still down to a single line, but now we're in a dictionary, and it makes it super easy to write selectors against that and high performance ones as well.
Right. So actually the entity adapter helps you write your reducer and write your selectors.
Correct. The adapter actually comes with, I believe, 4 or 5 selectors that are predetermined, that are exported. And those are ones that'll select the root. So it'll actually go ahead and select whatever my store name is dot entities. So I don't have to drill down into that property to now get to my dictionary. I believe it has a select all, select total, and a few other ones like that. It helps with those, giving at least a base starting point for your selectors, and you don't have to write all of those from scratch if you were doing it on your own.
Right, and you can chain selectors, so that's the, it gives you the hook to start with, and then you can refine them. So you could keep, you know, you could build on the one that gives you the entities to find the particular, to watch a particular entity that was of interest to you, for example.
Exactly. And I think even to take a step back, if people aren't familiar with selectors yet, you know, if we think about the store as like a database and the selectors are like queries, the great thing about selectors, and they're actually part of the NGRX store library, and you don't actually have to use them against a dictionary. They'll work with just plain old objects as well. But the great thing that I love about selectors is they're composable. So I don't have to write one big selector that starts out with, okay, first go get me the root, and now I'm going to drill out down this way, and then I'm going to roll up the data like this, and then here's my next step, and so on and so forth. Instead, I can actually use the create selector function in the store that allows me to compose selectors together and gain the power of the composition versus having to write it and roll it all in one.
Yeah.
So I guess one thing that I'm wondering then is, you know, if we back up a little bit, and I haven't done a ton with NGRX, you're talking about structuring your data. So is this just opinions that sit on top of the Redux state modeling paradigm in essentially saying we're going to use dictionaries, NGRX or Redux allows you to use arrays or anything, and you know, you normalize it as just a matter of using this, and NGRX just says, hey, just stick stuff in here? Or am I misunderstanding, you know, where the division is between the two?
Yeah, absolutely. When I first started looking at this, it still wasn't published, and I was having to pull it down with Yarn, and it was a lot of fun to just even try to figure it out. And at the time, I was like, well, you know what? All I have to probably do here is just go ahead and define out my interfaces and then feed those into the adapters, and you know, NGRX entity is going to fix everything for me. I don't have to worry about my nested data. It'll unnest it and do all this great stuff for me. But that's not true. It doesn't do any of that. It's a way of handling data. If we want to use the dictionaries, it doesn't force us to do it. You know, with the addition of this library, we can still do nested data. We can compose it however we want. But if we do choose to have simplified data and we want to take advantage of the dictionary and the performance from that, then the entity library is there to help us and make that happen. So what I'm saying is we're starting to see it even now with applications where we're decomposing the data down to, you know, just entities, and we're normalizing it, right? And then there's other areas of an application where we go like, this data is nested and we're just going to leave it the way that it is. So there's not a, again, one size fits all on how we're going to do this. We're going to take a look at each data element, each form, how we're using that data, and decide, do we want to decompose or normalize this data, or are we going to leave it as is? Because it might be more complicated to break it all apart and then have to reassemble it to get it back up to the server in a way that they can accept it. So it's really a case-by-case basis.
One other thing that I'm just thinking about here, because you're talking about composing and decomposing the data structures, and one schema that I've seen for queries is GraphQL, and you essentially do get one big object. You know, it could be an array of big objects, or it could just be, you know, one big object. And so in that case, do you have to deconstruct it, or will the NGRX entities help you do that?
No, you will have to deconstruct it yourself. Yeah, there's nothing built in there, and I don't really think it should be in there either. You know, every situation's different, mm-hmm. every form's different. How we're going to apply this, and I think if we were to have a library that was opinionated and said, "Hey, this is the dividing line. This is how we're going to do this, and this is how we're going to break it apart," that might not always work for us. Often in those cases, when they do work, it's great. When they don't, I have a new problem that's much bigger than the old problem.
Right.
And so what I really like is the ability to divide it myself and say, okay, look, I think this is what makes sense based on how we're doing the UI. You know, the other big case here that we didn't talk about is the reason why we don't want nested data is it'll force re-renders of the entire screen or of entire component based off some one little child thing all the way down at the bottom. And even though I may have components that are normalized or decomposed down to smaller and smaller components, down to the smallest element, you know, I might have a blog list with a blog component with a components, a comments component with a comment component. And even though I have that broken down, it's really nice. It flows really well. If I have all that data nested and all I do is add a single comment, it's going to force the entire, potentially the entire tree to re-render.
Right.
So I could have hundreds or thousands of components unexpectedly, you know, re-rendering, and I'm paying that performance hit for all I was attempting to do was make one little change. So that's always something to consider. So, and that's why I think it's really important that we have the ability to pick how the UI is. I'd really like it to be like this. This is my divider. This is where I'm going to go ahead and make, you know, the decision on what is nested and what's not nested. So again, you know, it's even contrary to what I said earlier, you know, I think the standard should be normalized as much as possible, but then there's going to be one-off cases that it just doesn't make sense.
Right. Are you ready to master Angular? Oasis Digital offers Angular Bootcamp, a 3-day intense workshop class for individuals or teams. They cover Angular 4 and 2 and focus on the skills and knowledge you need for complex data-rich applications. They also still offer AngularJS for teams supporting older projects. Bring them to your site or send developers to them in St. Louis, San Francisco, New York, DC, and other cities, and online at angularbootcamp.com.
So I'm gonna lay a heavy question on you that I'm pretty sure you don't have the answer to, but I think it's important for the audience. How do we make the Redux NGRX pattern easier and more approachable for the average developer?
Wow. That's like the million-dollar question there, right?
Because especially as you were like diving into the selectors and dictionaries, as someone who's never used it, I was just like overwhelmed. I was like, this is way more complex than anything I could ever do. So I don't know how to, I don't know how to breach that either.
Right. You've got selectors, dispatchers, actions, reducers, state, stores, effects. You just, you know, now you got NGRX entities and it's got its adapters. The concept count gets higher. And from somebody who's played around with it quite a bit over the last couple of weeks, I'm getting more comfortable with it. But I'm like, wow, that's a lot of concepts to kind of grok. And I'm trying to figure out how do I make this easier for people to approach personally. And I'm just curious, from somebody who's used it longer than I have, which I assume is you, what have you done to help kind of bring this to people to say, here's where you should start and slide in this door over here?
Yeah, you know, it's I think most people learn Redux because they have to at some point. You know, when they get to that point of hey, I've got problems in my application, I've got complexity, and they've been banging their head against steel plate, and this is the, you know, they realize that hey, this is really solve a problem, and so they learn it because they're forced to learn it, so they can solve a particular problem. So how do we make it more generally available to community? Well, I think there's a lot of great training out there on it, and I think we start small. I think that one of the things I want to personally work on is a Tour of Heroes Redux, and get some training material out there on that. I think that's a really good starting point for people. It's an application that we're very familiar with, you know, with the quick start, and I can build from there and start to see. But I don't know if there's a really easy way that that people can pick this up outside of something like that. What I do know is this, is that when I see Redux used in larger teams, it seems like the velocity is higher. We're getting more stuff done. It just seems to flow a lot faster. We write that code once for the action, the reducer, the effects, and we pretty much have that all laid out. And then as a team, you know, the main thing I might be doing is writing selectors to modify that data and morph it slightly as I need it, you know, so I can see products slightly differently, or I can see, you know, customers slightly differently. But the, for the most part, that it's you know, all there, and I don't have to do a lot. But yeah, I think it's a really good question of how do we continue to do this. I think we need more talks at ngConf on Redux. What do you think, Joe?
Totally agree.
I think you hit the nail on the head with the last word, Redux. I think before people get into NGRX or any of these other pieces, it's important to understand the pattern first. You know, really understand what is that pattern doing? And even take Angular out of the equation and just look at what is that pattern doing? Why do I care about it? Because to me, I'm never really good at figuring out how to use something until I know what's the carrot at the end of the stick. Like, how am I going to be better? And when you put in all these other things on top of it, makes it hard and kind of clouds that situation, in my opinion. So I kind of like the approach that Todd Motto took in his recent course. He put a free NGRX course back. His first hour and a half, he spends explaining the patterns and showing you how to do it without Angular. And to me, that was the gold in the course. The rest of it, he's using Angular. I think it's fine. It was good. But the gold in Todd's course there was he started out with, let's just talk about the pattern. And to me, that actually helped make it click more.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. If you don't understand the underlying pinnings of what's going on, it becomes very difficult. One of the things I do like is with the NGRX library, looking through that source, it's super clean. It's super well written. Anytime, you know, when I was looking at the entity pieces, I was digging into the source code to understand, like, how does it work and what's going on. And it was pretty simple to do that. But again, without the underpinnings of understanding, you know, why actions, why reducers, what are effects for, and understanding, you know, going from state one to state two to state three and so on and so forth. If you don't understand those concepts, it's very difficult to pick this up and be able to implement it in any application.
So I think that's the challenge for our community is to figure out how can we explain this better in a way to more developers so it's not just the buzzword, you know, that high-end developers are using, that this is something that can be used at more places more easily.
Sure. I think that's, I mean, if you take a step back from that, we look at like just design patterns in general. Anytime that we start to talk about more advanced patterns, you know, it's more complicated. There's more of a learning curve and it, you know, we have to start to understand those underpinnings and, you know, how things work and why, what are the use cases and when will we not want to use it? So yeah, it's definitely a challenge when we're starting to talk at you know, that level and we're starting to look at patterns like this that can help solve problems.
I'd rather not learn it at all. I'm sort of serious about this. I think that we have to start from the problem and not the pattern. And if the problem is managing domain data, by the way, I think I totally agree with your separation of into the different kinds of state, you know, of application state, UIX or UI state and domain model state. Persistent, which I call persistent state, the stuff that you would store in a database, you would persist. But if you have to learn all this stuff to get off the ground, it's a non-sell. There's just too much stuff to learn already. We need a different way. Maybe these patterns are at work under the hood, but if we have to teach these patterns in order for anybody to get off the ground, we're going to crash. And yeah, that's where I am on it. And I think we've made the case today because I think we've flooded people with terms, and they're going to say, "What problem am I solving here? I've lost track of the problem." And we got to find another way.
Okay. So I can definitely respect that opinion. The bottom line, I think, is the goal is to reduce complexity by just doing a better job of managing state. If we have an application that's not complex, you know, it doesn't make sense to do it. But I think that what we're seeing is that applications are becoming more and more complex, and we're having to figure out ways to manage that. And having gone through the life cycles of applications, and it starts out simple and it just gets more and more complex, that these patterns just become necessary. And there's other communities. If we take a look at the React communities, even Vue is taking this on. You know, they're doing Redux patterns in their application development. And you know, obviously React has been forever. And those developers, some of the boot camps locally, that's what they teach. They teach those patterns. And so the developers are able to grasp it. I think it just, it's a mind shift for the Angular development. Seem to start to look at application development a little bit different than how we've done it.
Yeah, I have to say, I talk to a lot of people across the communities, and I'm getting ready with Joe to start a Vue podcast and with others to start a React podcast. And the more I talk to people, it seems like the people fall into one of two camps. And they're either on the side where you are and basically saying, you know what, this solves a lot of my data and, you know, information management problems for my app. And then a bunch of other people are saying, look, the cure is worse than the disease. It's hard to use. There, you know, it seems simple when you start talking about it, but it quickly becomes this extra thing that I have to manage in my head. And honestly, I think there's probably a happy medium between both. And the more that I talk to people, you know, some people, it really does solve their problem and it solves it well. And they get their head around it and that's it. But I think a lot of other people, they're pulling it in when they don't need it, or they're writing apps that don't really have that much data to manage. And so, you know, instead of pulling it in as the default thing that you put into your React app, which is what a lot of people do, and I see people do the same thing with NGRX in Angular apps, I think a lot of people need to just start with the basic setup. And then when you start to have some of these pain points, when you start to go, you know what? I wind up doing a whole lot of running around to update stuff or to manage stuff or to make my components talk to each other. Then you start looking at NGRX and going, yeah, maybe this will actually solve this issue so that I can set something up that's already thinking about this problem and solving it. And so, you know, I don't know if it's more that, you know, Ward just isn't writing apps that reach the level of complexity in their UIs and the amount of data that they're managing to where he's just not seeing the value here, or whether, you know, you actually are writing these with a lot of components and a lot of moving parts. But, you know, I don't know. It's an interesting thing to look at because, yeah, I know a lot of people that really, really hate this pattern and a lot of people that really love it.
You want me to answer that one, Char?
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't write anything. I just write demos. But seriously, we, my company, Ideablay, we write very, you know, we write a lot of enterprise apps,
mm-hmm.
and we don't use this pattern.
Okay.
And we use, but we write things that have enormously larger and more connected, entity graphs. Moreover, the thing we didn't even get close to was the question of how, if you had a normalized graph, you would ever walk the graph from, say, customers to orders to order line items to products. There's no provision for that coming out of NGRX entities or any of these other things. So what do we do? Well, you know, you guys are all going to know that we, speaking of me and my team, ideally we use Breeze because mm-hmm. that's what it was built for. It was built for for highly connected domain models. And NGRX and Redux really wasn't built for that. It was built for something simpler, more and it's a stretch, honestly. That's why we're starting to see people write libraries to make it work for rich domain models. And it's not there yet. It's way too hard. Can it get there? I'm increasingly convinced that it can. And NGRX entities is a big step in the right direction. But it's just too damn hard right now, and it's still hard, and we got to do something about it because people are going to be in trouble.
I think it's a fair point that there are other solutions. You know, there's this, there's Breeze, there's MobX, there are a bunch of other ones out there. And I think sometimes too, we forget that we can explore other avenues. Go ahead, John. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No worries. I think, I agree with Ward on a lot of his points. The place I feel like we really need to step back on, and we forget this a lot as technologists. We're often dealing with leading edge stuff. And what is easy? We hear a lot, well, it's easy. You just do this. You just do that. Once you know how to do something, sure as hell is easy. But when you don't know how to use it, try introducing these concepts to somebody who doesn't know what they are. Yes, we can all learn it. Yes, it took me about 2 to 3 days to learn this pattern and apply it to Angular. It's not beyond anybody's reach. That's really not the point I think we need to make. To me, when we have patterns that are complex, the real value comes in when we find ways to make them simpler. If we can make this pattern simpler to implement and use in Grok and understand, that's when people will start adopting it like crazy and really will take off. To me, that's the inflection point. I don't think that's impossible. I know for a fact that Ward's research and development that he's doing, so I've had a little peek at it, is showing a ton of promise in how to make this exact pattern a heck of a lot easier to use. It reduced a demo app that I wrote, just a simple demo app, from a couple thousand lines of code down to less than 500. So to me, that was a huge win already. So there's ways to do this. I think we just have to remember that what we know and what we're experts at is not, it's not the state where everybody starts. Once right. you learn something, it's easy. It's always much harder to learn that stuff though.
That's a good point. Jesse, do you have anything to add before we go to picks?
I think those are both great points. The thing that keeps happening is when we sit down and we talk to clients about, you know, what approach do they want to use? Yes, we want to upgrade to Angular. The one common prevailing thing is Redux. They want to do Redux. So I am seeing in the industry that there's a lot more requests for it. We tend to we will advise and we will recommend.
Jesse, do they know what they're asking for?
Yeah.
I want a jet fighter. I mean, why? What? I don't even know what that is. A fribbits. Do they know?
I know why I want a jet fighter.
You're right. They want a frim-fram fribbits thing. I mean, do they know what they're asking for, or have they heard that?
I believe they know what they're asking for. We sit down and have a. Jump in on there. I believe they know what they're asking for. They've gone down the path. They've got other applications. They've had complex data problems with, and they start to understand Redux. You know, they understand Redux. They just don't know how to implement it, and that's often why they're reaching out to us, is to help them with that implementation. And again, there's also time where we say,
back on that, Jesse. I don't know how you can say that you understand something if you also say I don't know how to implement it. I that doesn't compute for me.
Hold on. I don't think that's necessarily an A or a B test. For example, I know what a really nice shelf is, but I can't build a really nice shelf. Right? Or if I go and I build a shelf, I could see what's wrong with what I built in the shelf that I've done, but I don't necessarily know how to build it better, right?
I think that's valid.
I get a car, right? I don't know how the car works. I know how to get in a car and I know how to drive it. But I know what that is, but what do they know? What do they know about what a Redux is if they've never built one?
Well, I think maybe Ward, what you're trying to say is if somebody doesn't implement Redux well, they may not necessarily still be at the point where they have seen that, hey, this is actually going to solve problems that I have. And so I want you to solve the problems that I have. Right. Instead, what they're saying is everybody is doing this. And so I tried to do it and I didn't get it. I couldn't get it to work right. Somebody please come and do it without actually saying, I know that this is solving a problem that I have. Right. That's a slightly different point, but that might be, is that more like the point you're trying to get across?
I guess it feels to me like people have heard that they don't know how to manage state. Maybe they haven't even experienced it. And I think Jesse is saying that they've experienced that they've made a mess of it. And they've heard that Redux is a way out, but they don't have any confidence that they can use the Redux pattern themselves to do it. And they do have confidence that Jesse knows how to apply this pattern. And so they're saying, hey, Jesse, here, I'm speaking for you, man. But I'm just saying, you know what? I made a mess. I hear Redux is a way out of it. You look like the kind of guy that knows how to make it work for me. Come in here and save my butt. And I get it.
I don't know. Is that a fair characterization?
That's actually probably a fair. That sounds like a good characterization of that.
You know,
that
Jesse?
Is sometimes what happens. Absolutely. And there's other times where they've started to go down the Redux path. They understand it. They may not have enough developers. They may not have enough expertise, and they're in fear. They fear failure and not knowing, you know, how to do. And often it's not just Redux. They're making the jump from AngularJS into Angular plus Redux plus whatever. And so they've got multiple hurdles at that point. But I think you make, you know, valid points, Ward, and you know, I go back to the thing. It's like, you know what? There's no one right answer for anything. There's times where Redux is the perfect tool. And there's other times where, you know, just doing plain old Angular would suffice, and that's what we recommend. So
But one thing that you have definitely tried to put across is that in your experience, you found Redux to be a very good solution to a large set of common problems.
While you're thinking, let me just say something I think that we probably all of us can agree on, is that this pattern in general, Redux across Vue, React, Angular, is something that there's a lot of interest in. And I don't think we definitely don't all agree. I mean, Warren's got some points, and Joe and Chuck and you, that like, how valuable is it? How hard is it to learn? When should you use it? When should you not? I think we all disagree in points there, but I don't think any of us disagree that it's very interesting to a lot of people, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. I think a lot of people are interested in it. They want to learn more. They want to find out whether or not this is the right pattern for them and how they might be able to implement it. And so, you know, I'm excited about the training materials out there, what people are doing with it, the talks that are going on, to at least educate people and see if, like, hey, does this fit for what I need to do?
Yeah, to give you a little bit of data there, this is a small set of data, but at ngConf, right, we run workshops for the 2 days before we actually have the conference, right? And so this year we're offering quite a few different workshops. And one of those sets of workshops we're offering is John, here, one of our panelists, and Dan Wallin. They're doing their 2-day introduction to Angular, which in past years has been a hugely popular workshop, not just at our conference, but at many other places. It's something that a lot of people want to go see those two guys teach them the basics of Angular, right? And there's 20 people that are just learning Angular. Well, this year we're also offering an NGRX workshop as well on one of the days. It's just a single day where John and Dan's is a 2-day, but we're offering that on one of those days. Well, that workshop this year is actually as popular as the intro to Angular workshop, or at least 90% is sold, like 90% as many tickets. So almost popular. They're kind of neck and neck, which is a huge shock to me. Last year we sold, I don't know, something like 250 people went to the intro to Angular workshop. And then the next biggest workshop had something like 60 or 70 people in it, where this year we're seeing that the two workshops are selling roughly the same quantity of people. So it just shows that a lot of people have changed their perception as far as what they need to know. Now it's not so much, hey, teach me Angular. Now it's like, hey, I need to know how to solve some problems in Angular.
Yep. So one thing that I'm wondering about, I was having a conversation with somebody the other day. We were talking about React. And, you know, we talked about how all of the major frameworks at this point have gone to components, and they have some form of shadow DOM and things like that. And, you know, so React in a lot of ways was a game changer as far as how we do development. Is this area going to be the next game changer? You know, it may not be Redux that eventually comes out as the winner as far as how we solve these problems. But do you think this is where the next major revolution is going to happen?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. You know, I think kind of going back to what we talked about earlier, about when we started breaking stuff down into smaller and smaller components, we started to, you know, realize there's new problems. All this component communication going on, and how do we do this? And yeah, you know, there's lots of different techniques, but I think that's like the next, the next big thing. Like, how do we solve these problems? Is it Redux? Is it some other way that we're able to simplify the communication, simplify our code, and organize it better so that you know, we eliminate this problem, we move on to the next, right?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking out loud with him, you know, yeah, is there going to be something else that comes along and is the next best idea, at, you know, post components? And I just don't see anything moving that way. And so it occurred to me, you know, maybe it's something completely orthogonal to it that just makes some of this other stuff easier. So it'll be interesting to see where we wind up with it.
Well, I have a theory about this. I know we're going on long, but like, I've had this Breeze library forever, right? But what we didn't have was a lot of people trying to manage state in the early... They were just trying to figure out how to make SPAs work. So all the attention was on UI. And you couldn't get anybody to think about state management because they had to put all their energy into figuring out how do you get things in and out of the screen and all that other stuff. And so these frameworks had to evolve. And none of these frameworks dealt with model at all. All right? Not Angular, not Knockout, not Backbone, not React, none of them. But eventually, when you spend enough time and you start to settle down and you start trying to write an application, you eventually decide that it isn't all about UI, that you have to manage persistent state, the stuff that you're pulling in and out of the database. And finally, you can swing your attention around to that problem. And I really feel like when we were pumping Breeze out there, people were just weren't ready to face that as a problem. And now that there have to be real applications on the client side, and they can't just go out and HTTP to the server anymore to get their data, which was all they thought they'd ever have to do. Now that they actually think they have to organize the state and manage the state on the client side, now they have an appetite to solve this problem. Yeah. And that's why we're seeing the Reduxes and the Mobixes and things now at this point in our evolution.
Right? It's the maturity of the, I would say React and Angular are the first super uber mature frameworks that have been out there. And Vue is fastly rising and joining
that. Right in there.
Yep.
Now people don't have to worry anymore. We're not worrying about JavaScript flavor of the week. Now we're like, okay, we know how to build apps in any of those three awesome frameworks. Oh, crap, all those big problems we used to have, now we've got to figure out how to solve those.
Right.
And I think that's data. Why it's time for these.
So now they're saying, wow, now that we saw that, yeah, where's the data? What do we do about data? We can't do it the way we used to do it. And so now it's time to go shopping for a solution to that. And right now the flavor du jour is the Redux pattern. And I'm not saying that I don't mean to suggest that it's going to evaporate. But people are desperate for an answer to how to manage state. And, the Redux pattern has been sweeping our consciousness. And so people are now ready to attend a workshop on that, Joe. Because they're beyond how do I bind to data onto the screen. Now they're like, how do I manage the data in the first place?
Yeah, and reduce complexity. I think that's the number one thing people are looking for is how do I make this simpler? How do I get rid of, you know, some of this complex code and how we're communicating between things and whether that's state management or whatnot. So
right, you're talking about data and state complexity, because yeah, not overall app complexity.
Well, it could be overall app complexity as well. Not so much on the like domain rules and that whatnot, but just, you know, when we're talking about a complex app, you know, whether it be a complex wizard with dynamic forms or whatnot, you know, we're all looking for ways that we can reduce the complexity in our applications and the implementation of what we're doing, right?
Maybe we can do a follow-up on that, because I honestly don't know how a data pattern can make my overall application less complex when we're not talking about data, though.
Yeah, that's going to be a good topic, John. workflow through an application. I actually do think the Redux pattern and the effect stuff has something to say about how you manage workflow. But it's different than the topic we were covering today, in which we were talking about the management of domain model state. Domain state, persistent state.
Yeah, and I just to come out of my opinion on this, I actually like the Redux pattern. I really do. But someone asked early on, like, as you built any large apps? Ward definitely has. I'll speak up for him. He's built very large apps. I've built a ton of large apps too, and I've never used this pattern on some of those massive apps. Some of the apps I built are used by millions of people, and I've never used that, and I've managed state. So it's possible to do it without these, but if there's a way to make a consistent pattern to manage state throughout your app that we can all benefit from, I think that's the promise that people are really attracted to. And to me, that's kind of sums up my interest in Redux. Why I started looking into it. It's like, you know, if this can help me build those larger apps in a better way, I'm definitely interested in learning more.
I think that's a really good point, John. And I think it's really good to observe that people really have built big applications without this pattern, and they've been, you know, they've been pretty successful at it. I know John was really successful with it, you know, and a lot of our customers have been too. So it ain't the only way to manage complexity, all right? But it is a really interesting way, an important way to think about how you manage your data. And I'm super curious about it. John's super curious about it. And Jesse, you appear to be sold on it. And I can tell you this, You got to have a way. You got to have a way. If you come in there with nothing, you're in big trouble.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You got to have some sort of solution, some way.
You got to have a problem.
Yep. It's absolutely. Always a problem. Now, the question is, do you have that problem or not? And I think you stated that really well, Jesse.
Yep.
If you don't have that problem, you shouldn't be looking here. But if you have that problem, this is something to look at.
All right. Well, I'm going to push this over to Pix because I'm sure people are going to look at this episode and go an hour and a half. That must have been a doozy of a conversation. yeah, let's go ahead and do
let's
some picks.
Let's keep going. Let's go another hour and a half.
Yeah.
I can talk all night about this.
Yeah. Before we get to the picks, one thing that I do like to do is just give our guests an opportunity to let people know how to find them. So I know that you know, Rebug, you mentioned, is a consultancy. So if people want to hire you, or maybe you have a blog, or they want to follow you on GitHub or Twitter, I mean, where do people go for that kind of thing?
Easiest thing to do is hit us up on www.brebug.com, or you can go out to YouTube and look up Brebug there. We've got quite a few videos out there that we've published, and that's probably the easiest way to reach. You can also reach me personally at jesse.sanders@brebug.com.
Awesome. And Brebug is B-R-I-E-B-U-G, like the cheese. And that's why
correct.
I made the cheese joke at the beginning of the show.
All right,
that is correct.
Like, I gotta ask: is the derivation of this name come from like somebody was eating brie and had a bug in it?
You know, this is the number one question I always get. And when we formed the company back in 2009, I have two daughters. One, her name is Briella, and that's where the brie comes from. And then I have another daughter named Iris, and her nickname when she was a kid was Bug. And so when we're coming up with company names,
I love it.
So
I love that you named it after family stuff. That's kind of like, I was thinking it was more like Yahoo and Google, like, you know, just random names, but that's even better. Love it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Now that John spoiled my appetite for cheese, let's go ahead and get some picks. This episode is sponsored by Linode. Linode is offering listeners of this podcast a $20 credit, which is good for 4 free months at their lowest plan. Their plans start at 1 gigabyte of RAM for $5 a month. You can get your servers in any of their 10 data centers, and their high memory plans start at 16 gigabytes. Get a server running in under a minute. They do hourly billing with a monthly cap on all plans and add-on services like backups, node balancers, Longview, etc. VMs for full control, running Docker containers, encrypted disks, VPNs, etc. You can run a private Git server. They provide native SSD storage, 200 gigabit network, and Intel E5 processors. They have 24/7 friendly support, even on holidays, and a 7-day money-back guaranteed. So go check them out at linode.com/adventures in Angular. Alyssa, do you want to start us off with picks?
Well, sure. I was on a fun live stream last night around 9 p.m. They were announcing the survey results for the state of JavaScript. And they had like over 10,000 people answer the surveys. So I linked in the place that you can go to look at all those results and charts. And basically, it's not only like front end stuff, but they did some back end and even state management and mobile, et cetera, et cetera. So really, really interesting stuff. And it does look like React is kicking everyone's butt, but that's not really a huge surprise. So yeah, check that out. And, that's all I have for you guys.
Nice. Looks like it's time to get Sasha back on JavaScript Jabber.
I know, right? Yes. Yep.
Joe, what are your picks?
Kicking everybody's butt. I really want to know what that means.
I mean, like in every single chart, it's like React, React, React. And I'm like, really? Really? But like,
who's
survey?
Who's
just,
taking
just
survey?
Remember, every survey is based upon who takes the survey too.
Yeah. Right.
So. Yeah.
Right. And who promotes it. So since it's my turn to do picks, I'm going to start this off with just a little bit of information that might be of interest. Speaking, you know, and since Alyssa just mentioned this other survey, and that is that the metrics for NPM downloads and visits to the Angular.io site are actually better now than they have been at any time. Remember back in the days when the only framework that anybody ever talked about or built anything with was AngularJS? Angular now, so version 2, is actually experiencing better. These are objective numbers, right? These are like how often people are visiting the an official Angular site, how often people are downloading Angular into projects, right? These numbers are up over, they've never been better, right? So I think that's it's always interesting to see that it's not the picture and the truth about what actually is going on is probably a lot more complex and nuanced and deep than what we think. I wouldn't be so bold as to say that one framework is dominant over another. Google Trends is another place where you see some pretty interesting things going on. But I was on a podcast yesterday for JavaScript Jabber talking with a guy, and he said a couple of things that I really should have jumped in and been a little bit more Ward-like and said, wait a second, you're making some statements that I think are not backed up by anything other than potential self-delusion or just being in a bubble. Like I'm in an Angular bubble a fair amount, right? A lot of people I interact with are Angular people, so I feel like I'm in an Angular bubble. I'd like to be a little bit more objective in my viewpoints about things. So
I don't know, man. The more I do, because I'm writing this white paper right now, and the more I do research on the other frameworks, I'm like, yeah, Angular is the best. So I'm like, I don't really want to leave my bubble.
Right. Well, there are definitely a lot of reasons to like Angular, so.
Yeah. Anyway, so I thought that would be some interesting things to point out with this, like the metrics don't show. To be honest, what I think is that we're also just building a lot more front-end apps, SPAs, as we call them nowadays, than we ever have in the past. And so we're seeing vastly increased traffic across the board. And that's my own personal opinion. That's what we're seeing, is that everybody's experiencing a huge surge in usage and interest, right? It's probably still true that the most popular framework, front-end framework in use on the internet is jQuery today, but I think that's probably going to be changing here fairly soon. Anyway, getting back to actual picks, I want to pick a couple of things. One, ngConf, as usual, it's coming up. Tickets are now on sale, so go out and grab your tickets. We've got some awesome workshops we talked about in this episode going on, plus others. I'm going to be giving workshops on both testing and migrating from AngularJS to Angular. But the other pick I'd like to make is Breebug. And I'm going to say specifically, as much as I think Breebug is probably a great company, it's actually, I want to pick Jesse, because Jesse's like this super amazing guy. I met him in person over down in Florida at Angular Mix. And from that conversation, he was like, hey, and he had no idea who I was. Even though he was sponsored...
That is so true. I had no idea who you were.
I just came up to chat and told him that I really liked this talk, right? Just some random attendee. And he's like, hey, we're trying to help out the local community for our meetup in Denver and get some speakers. Do you ever speak? And I'm like, inside I'm kind of snickering, because sometimes I feel like I do nothing but speak. But I said, yeah, I speak sometimes. He's like, hey, would you like to come out? We'll help cover your travel costs if you need it. Come out to Denver and give a talk at our local Angular meetup. And so then I introduced myself as one of the organizers of ngConf, which he's already sponsored, but I'm not somebody that interacts a lot with the sponsors. But so I just thought that was really cool that Jesse is leading an effort at Breebug to really help their local community. And that, I think that is by far such a great thing for companies to do. It's very obviously very selfless, right? He didn't care about, ooh, you're a person who's famous and I want to get to know you or anything like that. Not that I am. Although Stephen Fluen's wife calls a geek famous.
Nice. I've got your autograph on your picture on my desk here.
I really respect that. Somebody who just says, I just want to make the world a better place. Right. And I want to utilize some of the, he's obviously utilizing the success of Breebug because he's spending their dollars to help get people in. And so then he asked if I could help. And I think I overwhelmed him with that. But then he also said he'd like to come and help with ngdoc.io. And so I've had a lot of people say that they'd like to come and help with ngdoc.io. And I got a few people that have spent some time doing the curation. And then, but really, it's only been Alyssa that's actually spent any real quantity of time. So it's a tale that I've heard a lot of people saying, hey, I'd like to come and help. But then when I actually say, great, come and, you know, development is not a thing where you come and show up for 20 minutes and help out. But instead, Jesse was like, oh, I just did a bunch of work and let's do this, and kind of whipped my butt into getting into shape our deployment procedures. So instead of me just copying a little bit of code up to Heroku, now we have a real true, we're following the sort of the Git flow procedure. And so that'll be my final pick, was actually Heroku. I did a lot more with Heroku than I even knew it would do to set up our deployment, and found that it worked out pretty well. Obviously, there's plenty of other deployment options for deploying an application that work really well, like Dockerized things and stuff. But I found that Heroku actually, after some work and some effort, going through that effort that we talked about in a previous episode, Ward, right? Like, I probably spent 13 hours total getting this all put together. But a lot of that was me just learning and wanting to read and understand things. But we finally got it whipped into shape. So thanks to Jesse for spending a lot of time and helping me get that together. So those are my picks.
I think you could totally do an episode. We could do an episode on that, Joe, of you like walking us through what you did. I'd love to hear that.
Like the second or third episode on this topic. I do think this is actually a very useful topic to have, this sort of discussion, because it is at least a common problem for people that are doing, you know, pet projects, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Staff, and you're supplying it to crazy servers and you're less involved. But when you want to deploy something that you built by yourself or in a small team, Heroku is a great choice. And there's a lot of complexity to it. I spent a lot of time, so.
Nice. Yeah, we should get that on the schedule. I think we're scheduled out through most of January, though. So.
Cool.
That was a lot. That's my longest picks ever. Sorry about that. I'm just extending this hour and a half episode.
David Brady used to do that all the time on Ruby Rogues. John, what are your picks?
I'm going to keep it short. I've only got 14 picks. I'll go through them now. I'm just kidding. I've got my biggest pick is just learning more about Vue and React and Angular. I think more people should do this. I have been the luxury of being in a position where I'm hiring people on my team who are experts at all three of those. One of them is Sarah Drasmer, who's also a Vue core team member. And we had some fantastic conversations about React, Vue, and Angular on our team. It's really opened my eyes to how similar, in a lot of ways, these frameworks attack problems. The one thing I've come out convinced on is that we all can talk more congenially with each other about these things. We'll start realizing that there is no winner, and having a winner is not a good thing. Having three awesome frameworks that all push the boundaries and push each other is actually a really good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So my tip is try each one for a day. Go to each one, do a quick start, and build the same app one day, pick the next one the next day, and third. I think you'll learn a lot of fun things with it.
Yep. And on that note, we will be having John on JavaScript Jabber to talk about some of this stuff with the release schedules probably a couple months after this comes out. So keep an eye out for that as well. Ward, what are your picks?
It's been a long day. So I have an announcement, which is to my total shock and surprise, I'm going to go see some movie next week. I think it's something like Revenge of the Jedi Awakens or something. I don't know what the hell it's called.
You know what? I'm in Florida and I think it just froze over.
I have absolutely no I'm not anticipating liking it at all, but it's a really good business move for me, so I'm doing it.
It's a good business move.
Yeah I'm doing it purely as a business move. I'm gonna see whatever that thing is, and I'm sure you're all going to tell me how great it is when we all get together next time.
Yep, absolutely.
What are you going to say about it?
Nothing good, I'll tell you. I promise that.
All right, I'm going to jump in here with a few picks. First of all, there's a conference coming up, NG Atlanta, and I just found out that I'm going. So I'm going to do a couple shout-outs related to that. One is for a company that Alyssa is very familiar with. Her employer, Progress, who puts out Kendo UI, is sponsoring my travel. And so I just want to thank them publicly. And I will be thanking them publicly while I'm there, too, because I'm going to be doing some video interviews that I'll be putting up on YouTube. So keep an eye out for those. Just kind of capture a little bit of the experience of being there and have some conversations with some folks about what it's like to be there. I'm also going to, I have a couple of questions that I'm just going to walk around the conference and ask people. And so I'm really curious to see what that comes out with. And so you'll be able to see some compilations too about, you know, how people think about Angular and what they're using and what they're doing, and some funny questions as well, as far as, you know, just seeing how people describe things when you ask them in kind of a weird way. So I'm planning on having a ton of fun, and that's going to be a lot of fun. So if you're going to be there, definitely look for me. I think Alyssa's going to be there too, because they told me they wanted me to interview her. So
yeah, I'm speaking there about service workers.
Awesome. So yeah, great things there. And then, like I said, you know, we're putting together the, what was that?
I'm scheduled to be at NG Atlanta too.
Awesome.
Yay.
Yeah. So come find us.
Wait, okay. Is everyone just going? Can we all just say we're all going?
Joe just bowed out, so I don't know if he's going or not.
Okay.
But yeah, so definitely look for us there. I think I can speak for all of us when I say that one of the reasons we go is to meet people. So, you know, come talk to us. And then the other thing is, I totally lost my train of thought. Yeah, I'm putting together the podcasts. So I'm putting up Indiegogos. As this goes live, they'll be up. We're putting one together on Vue, one on React. And the third one that I'm putting together within the near future is Elixir. So if you're interested in the Elixir programming language, you can check those out. And yeah, that's those are my picks. Did you catch that from Alexa? She's still learning about chickens questions, so I'll pick the Echo as well. But yeah, so those are my picks. Jesse, what are your picks?
Well, one, I want to thank Joe for, wow, what an amazing plug. I'm super excited to work on the ng.io site. We're actually talking about converting that over to Redux. So that'll be a fun project, doing an existing project and converting it over. My pick, honestly, I'm super excited about Star Wars, the movie coming out this week. And if you haven't seen it yet, they have these little Star Wars drones. You can be a X-Wing fighter or one of the new TIE fighters. They operate at about 35 miles an hour, and they shoot lasers at each other. Nice. And they score. And I don't know. We've got a couple in the office, but if you haven't seen
it. I know what I'm getting Ward for Christmas now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thai food? I love Thai food.
You open the box for either one, and one plays the rebellion music, and with your TIE fighter sitting in there and lights underneath it, and it looks amazing, and so lots of fun there. I also want to give Joe and Frosty a plug and thank them for coming out. They're actually coming to Denver on January 17th and speaking here. So we really appreciate that, and having some phenomenal speakers come into the community and share with the Rocky Mountain Angular group here. And then let's see, what other plug did I have or link? The other one, is Jest.js. So if you haven't looked at Jest.js for doing testing, it's not just for Redux patterns, but you can use it for doing a lot of UI testing. And being able to compare states and make sure that they're the same. So if you haven't looked at how snapshot testing might work, I think it's an amazing library. It's great for Redux. You can go ahead and do your comparisons between for reducers before and after states. You can also use it for your deterministic views. So basically the idea here is that if I give it a given state, that the view will render the same way every single time. So that's an excellent tool. And I'm just starting to see it get ramped up and starting to get some popularity here locally. So that's really all I've got.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming, Jesse. And thank you for getting Ward all riled up and talking to us about Redux patterns.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for being such a good sport. Love having good conversations like this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that was great. Always like a good chat on it. I can definitely see all points, and I really appreciate everybody's opinion on this. So thank you very much.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and wrap this one up. Thanks again. Thanks to our listeners, and we will catch everyone next week.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with Cachefly. Visit cachefly.com to learn more.